watch Survivor, and when the show ends, you really wanna talk about it with like-minded friends. It might be hard to find some, but don't you shed a tear. Check out the Purple Rock Podcast, and this is what you'll hear. John will make some dumb jokes, and he likes to yell and curse. And if they're not available, the backup hosts are so much worse. Spend the whole time being jerks, telling you you're wrong. And so we got this other jerk to sing you our theme song. It's the Purple Rock Survivor Podcast.
Welcome to the Purple Rock Survivor Podcast. I am John, my co-host is Andy, and this week we are talking episode 2 of Survivor Season 46. This one was called Scorpio Energy, Andy, which is something I can't relate to because I am, of course, a Taurus. Actually, I'm lying about that, which is something I do because I'm such a Sagittarius, you know? Actually, I forget which one I am. I don't even really know. But enough about star signs.
Just so we're clear.
Yeah.
Scorpio energy right
here. Oh, man. Well, see, I was going to say that what I'm interested in is the opinions of my favorite Gemini, Andy, but apparently, my random guess at your sign was a little off. So let's start with your opinions of this episode, Andy, my new favorite Scorpio.
Yeah, mixed bag, I would say, in that I think I still come out of the episode relatively in a good place with the season as it's developing. But I mean, there was a lot. Like too much stuff there, like, and not too much stuff, and that, like, oh my god, we're packed. It's just too much time spent watching this episode.
Yeah. By the way, I just looked it up. I'm an Aquemini. I'm with you in that I liked the content that we got. Like, overall, I enjoyed the episode despite it being a fairly predictable boot. But man, I was definitely feeling the length phrasing. it was a whole lot of episode, and I don't think that it should have been that much episode.
Yeah. So my wife conked out at like an hour 10 mark, right? Which should be enough to watch some TV, right? And I pause it because it was like during the challenge, right? Which was only like halfway through the episode.
Right.
And I'm like, I could see her conking out, and I'm like, all right, you're done, right? And I thought she said, I'm not. And I'm like, no, you are. And she was. And I'm like looking, it's like, why does that say 45 minutes left? And I'm like, that must be a problem with my recording.
Yep.
Like, it recorded the next show. There's no way, right? Oh, no. Oh, no, there was a way. And, like, obviously, this is brought on by, you know, the strikes.
Yep.
The content wasn't there. And if anybody's wondering, they're going to go back to 90 minutes after this because The Amazing Race starts off and they share the 3-hour block, which, I mean, 90 minutes in itself sometimes is a problem. But, like, I think this episode could have been a very easy, like, solid 90 minutes.
Yes.
I think there was that. But, oh, man. It's not there. And very few episodes of Survivor, I think, can be 2 hours that aren't like mashing basically two episodes of content together. And we just got two in a row. Like, we've watched 4 hours of the season. We've only seen two people eliminated.
Right. It was a little too much. And personally, like, this is why I don't watch movies, right? I don't like sitting down and committing 2 hours to media. Like, I just... It's fine because I know that I like Survivor. So I think part of the hesitation with movies is like, am I going to like this going in? Am I just going to bail midway through? I don't know. But, you know, this time it's like, I actually, similarly, my wife was passing out. I was just like, can we just fast forward? And I'm like, no, I can't because I have to podcast about it. It's like, yeah, it was too much. And I actually... also looked up to see if we were just getting 2-hour episodes the rest of the season. Cause genuinely I would have been like, okay, this is too much. Like, I understand writer strikes and all that, but would have been too much. So I'm glad that we are indeed going back to 90 minutes next week.
Yeah. And I know for some people, this is it, right? They're really excited about it. And that's cool. It's fine. If you're that person, I'm the kind of person that, look, I love music. I have, you know, and probably too big a record collection for financial decision making, but I don't give a crap about B-sides or like those extra outtakes or other versions of the song. It's like, just give me the album, the cuts that deserve to be there.
Right.
I'm not here for the filler. There are very few double albums in the history of music that I think justify their double albumness. And that's what this is. And yeah, so I can understand. So people are like, well, I like it when you just kind of get these scenes of camp life and all of that. And I'm like, yeah, but you know, it would have also been cool for it to feel exciting throughout, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not signing up to watch a jam band, right? Like I came to see a tight 90. Like I want that concert. I want to close. Maybe there's an encore. You know?
No.
But then that's it.
But don't make me wait too long right. for the encore, too. Like, we all know what we're doing. And yeah, I'll do my bit. I'll do the clapping.
Yeah,
like, but...
Oh, no, but T, don't leave. Yeah, yeah. All right. Yeah, like, if you didn't play one of the hits, like, yeah, I'll clap so that you'll come back out and play one of the hits. Like, it's fine. But
yeah, and I think for this one, they didn't know it was going to be 2 hours when they planned out the episode structure because they really could have had 2 challenges. You know, that would have helped, too, you know?
Yeah, a reward challenge in this one probably would have been useful.
A trip to the stupid island where like they draw a card maybe could have fit in here, you know? Oh, maybe they're like, we have not made finding that idol hard enough. Because, yeah, and I don't actually know. Because, again, I don't know if those scenes actually would have made me happier. It's the literal act of watching the same thing for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Again, luckily, this time I was able to watch on record. So, it probably took like 1 hour and 40.
Yep.
But it's too much. And I think most people believe that. And if you're into it, they're like, I wish there was an extra like footage stuff for you somewhere else. But that's not what I want to watch.
Yeah. I'm totally fine with that content existing for people to consume, the people that want to see that. But like,
yeah,
I'm good. I got enough Survivor. This is why I don't sign up for watching the Australian Survivor thing, too. It's just like they told me there's like 3 episodes a week. And I'm like, no, I'm out. I'm good with 1 hour per week. Like, that's a solid amount of Survivor. I'm up for that. I'm just not going to commit three hours of my life each week to watching this show.
Yeah, I think sports is the only thing that I'll do that for. And that's it's not the same teams playing each other every time. You know, there's at least some variety in that sense.
Right.
But like overall, like I think the stuff was fine. And like they really did a great job in taking what was ended up being the most obvious choice of the boot. The person who coming into this episode would have been, you know, the high odds on chance of like who's the next person to go and creating a fair amount of doubt of whether that was going to be the way I would go.
I mean, part of that is because the Purple Tribe is just a delightful dumpster fire. Like, I am thoroughly enjoying that Purple Tribe. I think all of them are solid casting. I mean, even the ones that are gone now. Like, I like that they've been the focus. I cannot imagine a like two-hour episodes where the Green Tribe was the focus because they went to tribal both times. Like, they just bore the shit out of me.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there's also this with the Purple Tribe, which we've seen so many times. Like, it's 2 losses, and then everyone acts like it's this massive.
It's the worst tribe ever.
Yeah. Oh, this is what a like downward spiral. We're going to end up like Matt Singh and Malcolm and Denise, which also, we got a callback to Malcolm and Denise this episode. That was fun flashback. But yeah, like, that's probably not going to happen, right? Like, just we've seen this happen so many times. You lose the first 2 challenges and then probably you don't keep losing, right? Like it's not a guarantee.
Well, especially because of the new rules, right? That now your sit outs carry over from episode to episode.
Yep.
That was a new rule instituted last year. Never really affected anything, but like both of those other tribes sat out their weakest person.
Yeah.
Next week, they'll each have to sit out 2 people who cannot be Liz or her doppelganger.
Right.
So that in itself could very easily turn it. The way it could go down is like, it's not just that they're losing. They need to vote out more people than they're allowed to vote out, you know?
Right.
But I agree. Like, I am glad that we're spending time with them. And that's like the back end of this episode where it's like, oh my God, we got like a full ass episode still. And the challenge is over. That actually all moved and worked because they're all bad in unique ways.
Yes.
It's fun, new ways of sucking at things that I'm really excited that they get to play in that space. Yeah. And it does make me wonder, because last year we had an absolute disaster tribe.
Yes.
And I'll consider like a real true disaster in that like two of them actually quit and neither of them was probably the worst player.
Right.
And it's like, is Survivor fixing it so that they put all of like these losers, or is it just like a thing about the game of like once you start losing, especially in the new era where you don't have the Flint or whatever, it just really snowballs into like just revealing all of the suckiness? Because I bet Green has a bunch of sucky players too. Yeah. We just don't get to see it.
Right.
I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, first of all, I think
in there at all.
A fun new way of sucking is the headline of my Grindr profile. I think it's, they're all flawed, but in very different ways, right? Like it's entertaining. And actually there's strengths here too, right? They're not like necessarily bad players. Like I felt like last season we had a lot of boring and bad players. Like in this one, the bad players are entertaining me. And then there's also some good players to counterbalance that with. Like I feel like Tiffany's doing things, right? And Kenzie's definitely doing things. We can discuss whether they are necessarily ideal things, but they are making moves. They're playing the game.
Let's talk about Kenzie.
Yeah, let's.
Because I think the big focus for her is like, oh, she's doing too much, you know, and there's like a lot of suspicion pointed her way. And I'm wondering, do you feel that to be the case? Was she doing too much?
I think it's generally a good idea to have like working relationships with everyone, right? Like you want to be able to align with them if necessary. That doesn't mean you need to be in a like a specific verbalized alliance with them. Like you don't have to say, you know, us three, final three to everyone. Like you don't have to have that right. deal.
Now I do believe the initial final three comment was not made by her. She just seized on it.
Did she? Because you know what? This is maybe one of those like Berenstain Bears situations where I'm like, nah, that was absolutely.
I mean, I can neither confirm nor deny, but I feel like I think it was Banu who might have said it. And then she's like, well, if we're going that way, let's just talk it out. And then that seemed to freak them out.
Hey, you know who didn't go that way, though? Jess. Hmm. Like in that conversation, Jess just was like, nope. I am on my own with no alliance. I got, you know, I'm not connecting with anybody. And then handed the opportunity, like, what about us? Final three. She's like, you know, I'm going to have to think about it. As though she's weighing other options that other she options, explicitly you know, told
I really them. Don't want to commit here because I got a lot on my plate.
Right, exactly.
I don't want this to be one of those situations where I'm invited to two parties on the same day. So
right,
just, I'll check my schedule.
Got to keep my schedule open. I mean, there's no invites currently, but what if, though? You know? Like, just the swing of going from being like, oh, I'm not connecting with anybody. I'd rather eat ants than talk to these people. To like, someone says to you, hey, man, what about us in an alliance? And you're like, eh, I don't know.
And not even just denying it, but this is what sets off alarm bells. Like, we got to get rid of her. She's thinking about voting out people that aren't me.
Right.
Like, that was the thing. You'd really vote out Strength?
Yeah.
Like, and the alternative is you. Right. So I will pretend that that's what I'm going to do because I'm talking to you currently. But.
It just, we've said this many times over the years, but just say yes. Even if it's not true, be like, yeah, that sounds awesome. You know, even a non-committal yes.
I think that's what Kenzie was doing. And that's why I'm not willing to call her out for like, oh man, she's doing too much. I mean, that's one of the reasons. The other reason is I'm in the bag for
her. Sure.
Right. Yeah. But it's because I don't know that she's actually doing that much. I just think it feels like a lot in comparison to the people she's playing with.
That could be true. Yeah.
Like she's just doing the simple thing of yes. And when like alliances and like, you know, working together ideas are coming up and everybody's like, oh my God, she's playing so too much. And it's kind of like also like Caleb last year in his initial tribe, he looks like he's just way too good because everybody else was a freaking moron.
Right.
So it's like, I don't know that she's actually doing that much. And on a different tribe, it might not come off that way. Now, maybe she does give a vibe, right? Maybe she gives a vibe of just like this fake person who's just always kind of politicking and, you know, blowing you, smoke up your ass and stuff. That part I don't know. But in terms of like what she's actually doing, like Q is very like, look at that. She's out there talking to people. And then later in the episode, we find out that Q believes he has a secret alliance with Liz and Bonhu. And it's like, well, so she's doing what you're doing.
Right.
What she's doing is what you do on Survivor. Right. Like, it really doesn't seem like it's that much. But in this tribe, it's like, whoa. Slow down, Richard Hatch.
I did enjoy, like, I think one of the highlights of this episode for me was Kenzie saying that you have to be smart to go to clown school, though. Like, admittedly, I'm not well informed on this topic, but I don't feel like the academic criteria for clown school are prohibitively high. Like, I don't think they're turning people away at clown school.
Yeah. It's like, you might be able to get in with that 3.0.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah. You know, I don't know how competitive it is.
Yeah. What was your AP scores like? I don't know. Yeah, I agree with you in that. I think Kenzie's doing the right thing. Like, she's getting to a point where she can talk to anybody, which you should do. And as you pointed out, Q's doing that same thing. I think Tiffany has settled into the type of thing that I think is much more common, right? Like, you find the people that you like working with and you have relationships with them. And then you don't go out of your way to get solid relationships with other people that you're not going to work with, which it seems like from what we've seen so far. It could be that it's just we're not seeing that, but that's how it seemed so far to me.
I mean, you say that, but that's only because it was portrayed as Kenzie's in trouble and Tiffany's solid. Just last season, Caleb saved himself because he made sure to reach out to Emily. And I can't remember the person whose name we were always mispronouncing last year that was Caleb's ally. She didn't, right, until like the last minute, and that's why her plan failed. Like, in general, it is actually just a really good thing to have good working relationships with all members of a tiny tribe, and rather than just ostracizing the one because, like, I don't need them. You don't know when you'll need them.
Right.
So, because Kenzie is the only one doing it, or, again, maybe it is really a vibe that, like, it just is, you can tell it's fake with her.
Yeah.
In which case, that is that's less that she's doing too much and more that she is too much. And it's like, because, yeah, it looks good for Tiffany, but maybe it just looks good for Tiffany because she has built-in advantages to ally with the two non-crazy people in her tribe that, like, Kenzie doesn't have, right? Tiffany and Q have a built-in, you know, relationship that Kenzie and Q do not. Tiffany and Kenzie have a built-in relationship that Kenzie and Q do not, right? So it's like, maybe she's playing better, or maybe she's just because Jelinski was such a terrible player in the first game, she had advantages that, like, Kenzie doesn't, or that Q doesn't.
Well, ultimately, they didn't need Jess to be aligned with them. And did you feel like Jess was the right call in this vote?
Yes, but also, like, Bonhu also would have been the right call. Like, they needed to vote out two people and they could only vote out one.
Man, Bonhu just spiraled so hard at that tribal. It was
everything they're worried about. He's like, oh my God, it's worse than I thought.
Yes. It was also, you know, I do think Jess was the right call in this case, but I was watching that challenge and it did make me say, like, looks like someone could use some Jelinski right about now. And so, like, there was definitely that vibe of, like, oh shit, you fucked up last week.
Yeah, I'm of two minds. Like, the height and reach that Jelinski would provided would have been very useful in that, especially in relation to Jess's lack of both.
Yep.
Plus concentration.
Yeah.
However, it was also like the other tribe had some, you know, height and they still struggled. It took a long time for both tribes. How often would Jelinski would just quit? You know?
Yeah.
Like, it literally required persistence. Yeah. Like, literally.
Uh-huh.
And he demonstrated none. So it's like, I don't know if he would have been the asset. Like, I think on paper, I'd rather have him out there than Jess.
Yeah.
But it's been this thing where I've been like, maybe they shouldn't have voted out Jelinski last week. Because also, yeah, just Banu is just an absolute disaster as an alliance partner. But that was also the problem with Jelinski, is like, you cave and tell people things right away.
Yeah.
But it turns out, like, Banu also does. It's tough.
I mean, I think ultimately Q probably fucked that one up last week. But, you know, sometimes Q gets things slightly wrong and we just stay loyal and believe Q knows what he's talking about, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, you see it a lot in this episode where he's just bouncing from theory to theory. And it's just like, you just stop thinking about which one's wrong and move on to the next one.
Yeah.
Because, like, he's all in on this plan to get rid of Jess.
Yes.
And then the idol thing doesn't work. And we'll get into that more. And then he's like, well, I'll do it. And then he's doing that. It's like, this is my chance to get rid of Kenzie. And it's like, it's really not. Once you've handed her that fake idol that you're telling her to play, you're committed to this action.
Right. There's no backseat.
Like, oh, well, she's loyal to me. Do you think she still will be when she finds out you punked her?
So one thing that I forgot to mention, because, you know, we talked about Banu spiraling at that tribal. But, okay, at that challenge, right, that was just an all-timer of, like, pre-challenge mat chat, like Banu, yes, comparing himself to Gandhi. Just the other tribe clowning on Jelinski.
That was great.
Yeah, genuinely, like, what a delight, you know? Like, it was such good stuff.
They could almost be on this podcast, not that any of them are invited, to be clear.
Right. It was so bad. And as far as the fake idol thing, like, you know, let's talk about some fake idols, because, you know, I'm watching that and I'm thinking, you know, like, let's say I'm playing hide and seek, right? And I'm hiding behind a curtain, my feet are sticking out, and I'm still not being found. And it's getting to the point where I'm like, oh, it's really warm here with all the sun hitting me, and I'm still not getting found. Like, I think at that point, I start to realize, like, maybe I don't have to try too hard on this, right? Like, similarly, do you really need to go the fake idol route? Like, I don't think this was someone that you desperately needed to punk. Like, I think you probably would have gotten her anyway. And I'm not saying that only because of, like, the Tiffany, like, leading her to the idol thing, like, but also because of the Kenzie conversation that I talked about earlier. Like, she was handed an alliance, potential alliance, after complaining that she had none. And she was like, eh, no. Like, again, she's not the highest level Survivor player. You don't have to pull out all the stops to take her out.
Yeah, and look, I understand wanting to protect yourself against the possible shot in the dark. But, like, she didn't play it last week. You know? Like,
yeah.
Are we sure she realizes that this is a thing? Like, she is one of the spaciest contestants that I've ever seen. And apparently, and I literally could click to confirm probably, but I'm not going to. I read that, like, she picked Fabio as the player that, like, she'd most likely play.
Perfect.
Like, I was like, yes, if that's true, I get it. So yeah, no, they probably didn't need to go to those lengths. And it's clearly, like, this is a genesis of earlier, right? This wasn't a what do we do about Jess. They had already made the plans to make a fake idol, and, you know, they were all excited. And I think the best part of it for them is that they got it out of the way early.
Yeah.
You know?
Get your overplaying done now when it doesn't matter.
Well, at least the fake idol one, because now they don't have the parchment and all of that. So they probably can't do another fake idol scheme and try to find the way to best implement it. I think there's a lot of people, like, talking about how it's mean-spirited. Probably. I loved it because it was hilarious. That we just cannot lead this horse to water. And it was just this perfect encapsulation of why Jess was uniquely terrible at Survivor. And just the frustration that they're showing. It was great.
Yeah.
It's like maybe we should go look for idols. Oh, yeah, you really think so?
Right. I mean, again, if you're just having to try that hard to even get her to think about that possibility, you know, maybe she's not a tough out.
Yeah. And then this, like, you know, the rest really underscores how I've always said that these things have no value strategically, because like Q had to hand it to her, right? And once normally somebody gives you an idol, you know it's fake.
Right.
Because why would they?
Yes.
Right? There's no value to it. And everything he had to do from there, it's like, okay, well, let's do this. And then she's just like, well, why don't we just get the votes to get rid of Kenzie? Why do I need to play my idol? And like, even somebody as spaced out as Jess, as checked out, was like, but is this real though? Like, even she, and I bet when she played it, she wasn't really all that confident about it. But like, even if you, yeah, you know, you play the stick, even if it, you know, you don't think it's, you think it's just a fucking stick, right? But she didn't play her shot in the dark. So, you know, I bet they can at least walk away being like, it worked. But did it though? I, in my overall, these things have no value. In my overall, how about them fake idols though? I still am not giving this win to anybody. You know, this was a nothing, but it was an entertaining nothing.
Right. Which is, as you've said, the best you can hope for with the fake idols, you know, just get some entertainment out of the stupidity.
Yeah, man, I've laughed at people mean-spiritedly a lot about these things, and I'm glad in the new era of Lovey-Dovey Survivor, we were able to do it again. And if you're one of those people being like, oh, they were too mean to Jess, then you cannot also be somebody who says that Jeff Probst is too soft on contestants. You can also be somebody who's like, we need villains in this game, because clearly you're not about that life. If just like a little bit of, they had a strategic reason to do it, probably didn't need it, but they had it, and come on, man. She'd look for a few seconds and then walk away. She did it to herself, man. This is not the player to stand, I promise.
It reminded me of the dogs in Up. Just squirrel. Just Tiffany's just like guiding her, like, how about you want to come and look over here? Squirrel. I'm looking in trees now. Just
did you look at that hole over there? Yeah. And it's like, that's the only way it can potentially work is if you hide it and somebody finds it.
Right.
But even there, I like that Jess outsmarted them in such a way.
Right. The opposite. Yeah, I was going to say, through her incompetence, outsmarted them.
Getting back to Banu, though, you saw it even at the mat chat and then through the challenge. It's just like, we initially assessed it's like, oh, he's just like too enthusiastic.
Yes.
But that would, like, he'd be somebody who toe that line of I really dig them, but also it's their positivity and stuff is wearing on me, and that's actually not his vibe at all.
Nope,
he is just too much. He's, you know, and everything is, yeah, everything's hard on his sleeves, to the point where, yeah, Kenzie non-committedly, it's like, well, maybe he's still a little emotional, and then he's like, they think I'm emotional, they think that makes me weak. It's like, nobody actually said weak, right? Now obviously he's hearing it third hand, but it's like, what you're doing right here, it's that.
Yeah, exactly.
And I love that he's like attacking Jess, like, Jess, when she's screwing up, while his shirt says be kind. I think he had it inside out though, so at least there's that.
Well, that's when he's flipping modes, right? It's like a
yeah.
That's when he can not be kind. So yeah, the Banu thing, it just went from like that first episode, I was like, oh, you know, this guy's at least like, he's just a sweet, happy-go-lucky guy. I understand. He's got a be kind shirt. You get it. He's got his whole vibe. That's his brand, right? And then just the Gandhi stuff in this episode and the intensity of like, he does like five fingers and makes it into a fist. And I'm like, nah, this isn't it. Like, I thought I'd be okay with it in that first episode. I'm not.
No, that's an emotional, like, wavelength that I just cannot be on, because it's just everything like you're probably on pins and needles with this guy, that you're worried that like he's going to take offense and like either it come out as anger or it's come out as deep sadness, and it's like, no, bro, it's we're cool, everything is fine. And yeah, at that tribal council, he's just spiraling right as they're saying, we can't afford to have somebody spiral like this. And he goes up to everybody. I don't know if Tiffany's, you know, terms mean anything to Banu. It's another one of those where people, you know, what was the one we were catching last year? Out of pocket. Yeah, they didn't. I mean, I know what that, the block is too hot. I don't know what the Banu does, or that he could unhot it, so to speak.
That's the opposite, is unhotting the block. I think that's,
yep, absolutely, yeah. Cooling it down maybe would have been the way to go, but I don't care. Yeah, I get it. After all, I'm like, fuck, I wish we could just change our vote to him, but it would require all of us being like, so Liz, we were lying, but now we're voting for Bonu. I do like, as soon as the votes start to come, the first vote comes in and he grabs his bag. I know what I see. Woe is me. And then the other votes, and he's like, I'm such a fool. That part I love. It's like, yeah, good assessment, Bonu.
Yeah. I mean, he clearly has a knack for this game. Let's switch to another tribe. Because again, the purple tribe, great to concentrate on, and deserves the bulk of our attention. But let's talk about the yellowish, orangish tribe.
Orange.
The stuff that we got most of, at least in the beginning, was Venus. And do you feel like you can relate to Venus, you sympathize with her, or is this just a case where it's like, no, I understand why they're leaving you out?
Both is the thing. Like, I completely understand why they're leaving her out. Yet I also can sympathize with the fact that because she's aware of it and how that might feel and how that makes her respond, especially because like they're not smooth with it, right? Like, okay, I get it. You all kind of picked her. Like, if we go to tribal council, it's her. You probably after two days, maybe it's three for the first day, not get too into it. But like, so to being like, well, now I can't talk to her. It's like, I don't know that it's that extreme.
Right.
But the way she reacts to these things only exacerbates it, right?
Yes.
She strikes me as somebody who, if you don't like her, that's a you problem. Not a me problem, mm-hmm. Which, I mean, I think that's most people. But with her, it then just reads as extra stuck up, which might have been their initial impression to begin with. So it just becomes a feedback loop. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, in this game, you need to make people like you, even if they won't, right? And I've said in previous seasons, there's sometimes you're just screwed by who you're stuck with, right? Like, you can end up in a tribe where it's like, oh, man, your vibe is not their vibe and it's not going to matter. Like, even in 44, like, you had Jam Jam and Carolyn, and they lucked out, I think, by Bruce not being around, right? Like, it allowed the weirdos to take control of that tribe. Otherwise, those two were probably like outcast early boots where everyone was like, oh man, not those. You know, I think in this case, Venus is at least perceptive. You know, like, she can tell that Tevin has ins with everybody, and Soda explicitly saying, like, no, I don't want to talk to you today. Like,
that's,
you know,
great.
There's signs there, some more subtle than others. I think, though, it's kind of like what you're getting at. It's just, you need to still try to figure out a way to form bonds with your tribe mates. And, you know, personality wise, they're probably not compatible, but you got to try other things. Like, try telling them that background story that you told us, you know, like, you find something to bond over. Maybe it's not going to work, but you got to try.
Yeah. And here's the thing, like, she did like connect with Soda, right? That was there. Do we really think there's no way for her and Tevin? Like, I almost think maybe part of the problem is they might be too similar, you know? So it's like, I feel like she probably had a chance. I don't feel like that she was like completely doomed to be an outcast on there, which leads me to feel like that this is somewhat on her as well. I get coming back from a challenge where they like weren't listening to you and thus you hurt your toe. Who knows? That could be a lot more damage than we know in this time. But again, that, so I'm going to internalize and I'm, but still passively aggressively let everybody know that that's what I'm doing. I understand why you feel that way, but you can't be that way.
Right.
This is a situation where being right will not save you. And I feel like that's kind of what's happening. Yeah, she's right. That like Tevin's been connecting with everybody, but you, then you got to do something about that. If you think he is the central hub.
Well, I mean, I think there was contrast in this very episode, right? Like, you know, Tiffany, after that challenge, is just pissed and she goes off to have time by herself because she knows, like, now is not the time for me to be around other people. Like, I could sabotage my game. Venus, on the other hand, like you said, is, you know, dropping some passive aggressive thing. She's bringing up some stuff that, you know, maybe could have been addressed differently if she wasn't in the heat of the moment still. It was just not ideal. Although I did enjoy when she was telling us about Soda stealing the idol from her every time they won. And then flashing back the show, showing us that, oh, yeah.
Yeah, she's not making that up.
Yeah, she really did. It's like.
Like, really blatantly.
What is that impulse?
Now, here's the thing. I think that Soda might suck. Yeah, like, I get it.
It's possible.
But. But I also just think that, like, Venus's default reaction for these things is to internalize. She talks about being an introvert, and it's like, man, that's death on this show. You can't just be like, okay, well, fine. Who needs you?
Yep.
You're the one who needs them. That's the what this game is.
Yep.
You can't do it alone.
Yeah. So, I mean, I similar to you in that, like, I get it. I have some sympathy for it. But at the same time, you know, she's not necessarily doing herself any favors with some of the stuff that she's doing. Another person.
Like when you're like less integrated socially than Liz, that's got to at least on some level be a you thing.
I was just going to say, you know, another person not doing themselves any favors whatsoever is Liz. And I was delighted. You know, I'm enjoying the Liz experience so much. She's just like a walking record scratch, and it's great. Did you know, Andy, that she has done 300 podcast interviews? And did you also know she tried for 301?
I'm aware. I turned to like, I know when you weren't on. Yeah, man, this is a key difference in how we would never be able to relate to Liz. Imagine bragging.
Yeah.
Like that, like guesting on that many podcasts is some kind of achievement.
Yeah.
Whereas you and I host a podcast, have so for over 10 years now, I think.
Yep.
And we do not tell people that. You know, when your wife, like, you tell somebody, you're like, what are you doing?
Yes. Oh, God, why are you saying this in mixed company? Like, I don't know these people.
This is not for public consumption.
Like, no.
And I get it. Like, I didn't know this was a secret. I thought you wanted people to listen. It's like, sure, but not people who know me.
Right. Not people that I can see in the face. Even just like when you'll meet somebody and they'll be like, oh, like somehow it comes up. They watch Survivor. Like, even then, don't tell them. Don't let them know.
And like, I'm not ashamed of what we do. Like, I think this is a good show. I would not do it. Yeah. It is clearly the Survivor podcast that I want to exist. And thus I made it happen.
Right.
But I also, like, it's not something to brag about. There is no barrier for entry for having a podcast. You know, all you have to do is do it. And then be willing to pay sums of money for it to exist. That's the barrier of entry. It's self-published.
Yep. Also, you know, I think there's a perception, and I think that we might have even had this perception when we started, that, you know, getting survivors to be like guests on your podcast is a thing. And it's like, oh, wow, you really got some clout to do that. No, that they all are obsessed with themselves, and they want to have you interview them because it will make them feel important. This is the reason we don't do Survivor interviews, because it's not a difficult get, right?
No.
I mean,
they never ask how many listens do you get. No,
they don't have a bar. There's no standard. Yeah. No.
I mean, maybe some do, you know. I don't know that we could like roll up and get like Parvati or Bus and Rob on the show.
That's fair.
Yeah. Yeah, man. It's not hard. We never had somebody turn us down when we did ask.
No.
It's just like, again, you've done that many interviews. It's like, nobody pays people to be a guest on a podcast.
No.
So it just means that you're like really available.
Also, I'm realizing we've turned down more people than we've been turned down by.
Yeah.
Also, and funny that considering the person we're currently talking about.
Yeah, which isn't the only one, by the way.
Right.
That was uniquely funny to us.
Yes.
It's like, what a weird thing to brag about, you know? It's not like you've been a guest on, like, talk shows
right.
or something.
Yeah.
Like, oh, wow, they thought you, you know, worthy of the airtime that they sell to advertisers. It's like, podcasts, and obviously there are some professional podcasts done by real companies, and maybe she's been on some of those. I don't know. But they're always just like hobbyists that are just clearly looking to fill content. So congratulations for being one. We have also been guests on at least one podcast.
That's true.
It was like, we like, wow, I feel bad for you for asking. Right. You're clearly desperate for stuff. Actually, I guess a couple. I don't know. Anyway, it's like, because it's really, it's nothing. It's just people doing what we're doing right now. But yeah, man, she cannot not bring up the fact that she's just stupid rich and they doesn't need this shit. That is such a weird choice. Forget in this game where we have documented proof that like people will not vote for somebody if they feel like they don't need it. And that's how you get, you know, racist senators and possibly incest loving senators from like Kentucky to like win the season. But like, you just don't do that in mixed company. It's not something you just get out there and brag that I have so much money.
It's just
right. Like, is that still impolite? Am I the old person in this regard?
No, I mean, it's just, you know, this is obviously not the first time the Survivor has cast someone without self-awareness. But I think in the post 40 seasons, there's been less of the Liz type, right? Like the over the top, I'm so great type. Just, I feel like we haven't gotten that as much. We've been focused on these, like, you know, personal stories, these, like, the better people, you know, like these are just good quality salt of the earth humans that we're getting from all over the country. And now we got a Liz, which is great. What a throwback.
Yeah. And a thought that literally just having now is like, maybe her like instinct to constantly rattle off her resume or like speak like a billboard as Randon spoke is like the consequence of being on so many influencer podcasts, right? Where they're probably just rattling back and forth. It's like, oh yeah, no, all I had, you know, $10 and I turned it into 100 and I turned down a raise because I was going to ruin my grind and all this. It's like, so maybe that's like just her method, like practice method of communicating with people. Because especially if you've been on that many podcasts, do you actually have conversations with people that aren't being recorded?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. And then also I think, you know, those podcasts would be more about, you know, talking around people anyway, right? You're just wanting to get your own words in, and what they're saying doesn't really matter to you. So
wait, do people do that on podcasts? I'm totally unaware.
Can't think of any. So let's move on. Actually, before we do, I want to shout out that,
you know, what's hilarious is like she asked to be on the podcast before she was legally allowed to talk about the show.
It was so great.
What would we have talked about?
I
actually did joke around that it's like, well, I do email marketing, so maybe she and I could just be like, which do you prefer, HubSpot or MailChimp, you know? Except that I don't want to have those conversations.
Exactly.
Anyway,
you a big Survey Monkey type? Tell me where you're at.
What do you think is a reasonable open rate? Because I'm getting 20%, but the lists are small.
The other thing I wanted to shout out about Liz was that bench, sit out bench doppelganger moment. That was great stuff.
That was great.
I mean, Survivor, they're good at their job. This was well done. And what a gift to them that both of them sat out so that could happen, right?
Nah, I'm hoping there was fist bumps as soon as that happened.
Oh, yeah, exactly. These producers.
Wait, quick, move those benches closer together.
Yeah. They had them opposite
sides. Can we take one away?
Right. They're like, hang on. You know, change the sitting situation. Let's get back to the rest of that tribe, though. We did see that Venus at least made inroads with one person. Randon comes, talks to Venus about finding that beware advantage. And I do not know about you, but I cannot stress enough how little interest I have in Randon. I am bored every time he's on my screen. What about you?
Oh, yeah. And like, you know, it does, getting back to what we're saying about Venus, like, it doesn't seem like she did anything to make that alliance happen. You know, like, that was 100% Randon and still like a lot of yawns. He finds it and he has to tell her. And my instinct is, no, you absolutely don't. Like, just offer the alliance. That should be enough. But I almost wonder if Venus wasn't giving him anything. And then he's like, okay, I got to sweeten the pot here in order to get her to like realize that like allying with me would be useful to her.
Which, again, it would be weird if he had to sweeten the pot, right? Because it's the same sort of thing as Jess, where like she's been very explicit to us about how she's got no options, right? So you'd think she'd be clamoring like, aha, I got one. No, like if you had to then do something to form a bond with her when she's desperate for a bond and someone to work with, it's not a great sign.
No, and I think I get it a bit in his case, because clearly there's already a three that he can't penetrate in Hunter, Tevin, and Soda. And then like the other option is Liz. So it's like, okay, well, then I guess it's Venus. The person I'd already ruled out, it's Venus. So in some ways, I get that. I should also say for Jess, it's like if her plan was to then be Machiavellian about, you know, what Kenzie did, it's like, I'm going to use this to take her spot. That would make sense to me, the why she would turn down this offer. But she didn't really do that because she seemed spaced out on the concepts of Survivor. But yeah, no. Brandon shouldn't have had to tell Venus about the advantage. You're in such a prime situation where nobody saw you. Had all the secrecy. You haven't actually technically lost a vote yet because it's Schrodinger's vote at this point.
Right.
You don't have it until you have a chance to use it, in which case you might have it. Or don't you? We'll find out. We'll find out if you can get what's literally in this box.
Open the box.
The Schrodinger's vote. Is your vote in there or not? It's both alive and dead. But that's all I have to say about him is the choice he made. Him himself is like, so average.
Yeah. And as you know, I have a particular like disdain for people who just don't entertain me. Like, that's your sole job on this show. Entertain me. And I'm out. Speaking of
people that don't entertain us.
Speaking of lack of entertainment value. Let's talk Green Tribe. How's the Green Tribe working for you, Andy?
They seem like lovely people who are enjoying each other's company.
Sure. I enjoyed the moment where Ben thought that meeting Nick Cage is a time where you could conceivably cry. Like that to him is the like top of mind moment where one would expect the waterworks to start flowing. Like, that was good.
Yeah. In general, I think Ben's interesting enough. It's just like a cornball thing to him.
Sure.
But like, I could see like putting his energy somewhere else. It could be good chemistry. He was absolutely quoting the boss about,
he was.
Can't start a fire without a spark.
Yeah.
And I picked it up. I don't know if anybody else did on his tribe, and that's unfortunate, but I see you working, Ben.
Sure. I can't believe we're getting more Taylor Swift content. Like, this show is engaging in like the broadcast version of SEO. Like, what is happening?
Well, I know. Do you think like they saw all the attention, like the NFL, the biggest entertainment property in the world, and they were like, wow, even they can get a Swift bump? And it's like, well, we can't really have her date a contestant or show up to cheer them on. What do we got?
Luckily, we have this guy who's a huge fan. I don't know.
He just loves the obscure things of Taylor Swift, Star Wars, and Harry Potter.
He's basically the only one, right? And also, just a quick little tangent with a personal axe to grind. Like, fandom is not a personality. And I get the irony of me saying that on a podcast that I started because we're both fans of Survivor. But
as we also said, we don't publicly share that.
Exactly.
We do. It's a thing we enjoy, but you cannot form your personality around the stuff you like.
Right. The only other thing of note on that tribe in this episode was I like that we saw Ben and Charlie thinking everyone was like transfixed and loving their name a song contest, when in reality, we get confessionals that are like, everyone just talking about how bored they are. Just like, when is this going to end?
Well, it's totally one of those things where it first starts, and they're like, hey, yeah, this is kind of fun. And it goes for a bit. It's like, hey, man, we're Star for Entertainment. And then it keeps going. It's like, oh, fucking hell.
Right.
And then they're probably engaging that, like, oh, we were rooting it on. How long do we keep pretending as though this is a thing?
Yeah. Also, though, like, what a glimpse into male bonding, because, you know, we just like to name
a
guy.
We're just naming some dudes.
We love to name a guy. Like, you, me, and Matt one time were just naming random NBA point guards. What a time. It's great. Jordan
Douglas.
Oh, Tim Hardaway.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, the thing with Charlie is, it's like, and the thing is, it's not the first time it's happened on Survivor where somebody makes the stuff that they are into their identity. It's a common theme, particularly among young people. It's just in Survivor, that thing is usually Survivor.
Right. Exactly. And I guess so, maybe because they've had so many super fans lately, like, you have to go a different tack, right? You have to try something else.
What's a more annoying fan base that we can tackle? I know. Swifties.
Gotcha. Uh-oh, they're going to come for us, Andy. You better watch it.
I mean, hey, no, come on. I listed my favorite songs by her just last night.
Hey, you know what? And it was so much fun. I feel like we should do that again because we got a perfect opener. We can now rank our top three Metallica songs. This is what the people tune into this Survivor podcast for. They want to know the take of two Survivor fans on best Metallica songs ever. So,
yeah, I mean, we think that Sega is giving us nothing, but Charlie just keeps providing content.
It's true.
For us.
You know, I really appreciate that because there are seasons that drag and we're just like, oh, what are we going to talk about? You know,
right. So hopefully that, you know, they can go something else. I mean, I kind of feel like Charlie is running out of something else's, but who knows? We'll see. You know what? I went first last time, so you go first. What's your number three Metallica song?
All right. For me, I would say Master of Puppets is number three. It's just like a musical EpiPen, man. It just like gets that adrenaline pumping. It is metal as fuck. It is like one of their all timers. And it just, it goes hard. It's honestly a really long song, which you forget, but it goes hard the entire
time.
Yeah,
so if you're up there at the karaoke mic, you're like, oh God, I'm still here.
Yeah, exactly. Are you doing karaoke Metallica? I feel like...
I've done one, yeah.
Yeah? I feel like Master of Puppets...
But more like in a small like room situation, okay. Not like in front of the bar. Yeah.
I feel like Master of Puppets is not that one. You know,
probably not.
Also, one is not that one. Not to spoil anything. List, but all right. So that's my number.
Yes, it's definitely not that one because we know what that one is. All right. Yeah, for me, my number three. Kind of slipping on the name right now, but it's that song about despair and grief.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of power chords going.
Yeah, a lot of
That one.
The banging the drums.
Yeah.
Yes, I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
but solid choice. And I should emphasize. Taylor's version.
Taylor's, yes. We love a Taylor's version. All right, let's go number two. For me, I would say Enter Sandman. It's like, it's an arena hit for a reason. You know, it's killer entrance music for athletes. It's great for like working out, running songs, whatever. It doesn't go as hard as Master of Puppets, but it's like, it's more polished. Like a lot of their like hardcore metal fans were like, ah, this is too soft. No, it still hits. It's an absolute banger of a Metallica song. What about you?
All right. My number two, I think I got this off Napster back in the day. It's a really foreboding song about like struggles with mental health and like the evils inside men.
Mm.
Yeah. Can't think of the name right now, but you know which one I'm talking about.
I do. No, yeah. Hey, I know the one. It, you know, solid choice for number two,
but,
honestly.
But Taylor's version.
Yes. Of course. All right. And. Let's cap this list off. Number one, for me, I'm going to say For Whom the Bell Tolls, but I cannot emphasize this enough, S&M version. You know, Metallica did perform with the symphony, I think it's San Francisco Symphony, and did For Whom the Bell Tolls. Freaking awesome. Like, it works out really well. So For Whom the Bell Tolls, what a hit. Specifically, S&M version.
All right, and then my number one is not unique. It's Enter Sandman. Frankly, it should probably tell you, like, you know, that having Enter Sandman as your number one will generally give you an idea of your level of Metallica fandom.
Yeah, sure. I mean, and nothing wrong with that. You know, not everyone needs to do a deep dive into the fandom. They're not all necessarily as big a fan as you are.
That's right. All right. Got anything else on this episode?
Man, it was 2 hours and I feel like we talked it to death. So we should probably wrap this thing up.
It's real quick. I thought the challenge was good. I think it was like really difficult and challenging.
Yeah.
Now it does do the thing where like everything before that puzzle was a waste.
Exactly. Time. Which I don't think that, you know, when they were running through, because they do test all these, they have a team that goes through and tests them. And so I'm guessing when they did that, it wasn't every team having as much difficulty with that.
Yeah, it's not starving people and stuff. Yep. And then like it obviously brings us the tension of what's going on with Venus and getting hurt, and like apparently it gave us the episode title.
Right.
And then, you know, X-Men style, which yeah, I'm glad that they're fighting oppression while trying to win this challenge.
Oh, you think there's subtext to the X-Men? You think that? You think it might just be
No, well, it didn't used to be, but now it's woke.
Yeah.
The story of obvious minority groups.
Really?
That actually kind of mangles the metaphor a bit, because unlike traditional minority groups, these ones actually are dangerous, but we won't worry about that.
Sure. All right. If you want to see any of our content, you can go to purplerockpodcast.com. I think people are talking about that Australian Survivor thing that I mentioned earlier. We got a fantasy league going. And of course, you can find this podcast and you can comment in our comment section. We have fun commenters. They're good people, Andy. So
yeah, so let us know your Metallica songs.
Yeah.
Because I want the same people that were passionately about Taylor Swift songs last week to be passionate here.
Yes.
And then they show that they contain multitude.
Bring that same energy is all I'm asking you.
Could you do that, by the way? Like name 104 songs?
A total.
There you go.
In history, yeah.
And like with the rapidity that they were like boom, 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 you know, I mean, in some ways, like I wouldn't want to watch it, but I think it could be a fun vibe amongst stoned friends or something.
I mean,
maybe I could do it for the Beatles, because those songs are pretty, you know, famous as well. But
you know what?
Just that level of recall, I don't know that I got.
You say that, but you know what we could do? Name 104 NBA point guards all time.
Oh, easily. Not even a problem.
Exactly. All right, we're not gonna subject the audience to that, only because we've been going long enough. But
you know, Pooh Richardson.
If we wanna, I mean,
Sedale Threet.
Tyloo. If we wanna do some bonus content for this episode, you know, like we said, it was too long on the show. You wanna have some bonus content? Maybe that's what we do. That's our little side project.
That's the 2-hour cut of this podcast. But I'm not cutting it. So let's just cut here.
All right, sounds good. Let's hit some theme music.
This is the copy.